Thought I had one. I ended up figuring them both out. So they were.
Yeah. Everything. Okay, so I think what I did last time was Shreya's theorem, right? For subgroups, generators for subgroups. So if you have and I thought that was roughly towards the end where we finished it, right?
Do you need your notes or anything?
So, theorem or lemma, we have a group G which is generated by elements G1 up to Gn. We have a subgroup, and we describe the subgroup not by generators, but we describe the subgroup by having coset representatives. And I think I had called them R, right? We have U is a subgroup of G, coset representatives R1 up to Rm, where Ri is shall be the identity. R1 shall be the identity, the coset representative for the trivial coset, and we let G bar, so for G in G, let G bar be the fixed Ri such that UG is the same as Ri. So that shall be the coset representative for the coset containing G. And then the lemma set, then U is generated by the following elements. Is generated by elements of the form. I take any coset representative, I multiply with any generator of the group, and that gives me some element, and now I take the corresponding coset representative, Rigj bar, and I divide this off. So, this element and this coset representative lie in the same coset by definition of this over line operator. So the quotient of this the quotient of this clearly lies in the subgroup. That wasn't the surprising thing. The big result was to say not only do they lie in the subgroup, but they actually generate the subgroup. Okay. And that gives you, for example, a way to find, in general, generators for a stabilizer. So if you want to build a solution strategy for Rubik's Cube, what happens? Look at what these strategies typically do. They build the cube layer by layer. That they say, okay, let's first put the top layer and then the next one. And they give you certain moves. They give you moves where they say, this is something which keeps the top layer fixed but switches two of these stones here. How do you find these generators? By basically, or one way, okay, you can find them by sheer dumb luck. You try things out. But basically, what you do is you don't just try to find an element which happens to fix the top layer and do something. But you search for some elements which do the same thing with the top layer. You take their respective quotient that will fix the top layer and possibly hopefully do something else. And what Schreier's lemma says is, if you do this systematically, you will get generators. You will not miss something. will really, the things you get that way will generate the stabilizer. So that solution strategy will work. And then for making it as a puzzle solution strategy, you want, of course, that they are relatively short. And if you look actually at the words or the expressions which are in solution in the solution strategies, they have a little bit this character. I mean, there are two things, two characters they have in there. One is it is a conjugate. You first do some operation, do something else, and undo the first operation, because you actually don't swap these two, but you can swap these two. So you first turn, swap these two, and turn back. Or the other thing is that they actually have this somehow this property of Dreyer generators, where typically, yes, they don't tell you what coset representatives they take, but basically, again, what is likely happening is that you choose coset representatives as product. If you have get a new coset, if Ri is a coset, and you multiply Ri with an element with a generator G, and that you don't yet know what that coset is, that will give you a new, you could say that's the representative for the coset. So very likely these coset representatives somehow, many of them start in the same way with the same sub-expression. And then if you look at what this is happening, then this BART thing will could quite likely start with the same sub-expression as this one. And if you invert it, order gets reverted and it gets inverted. So then you also have such a conjugation structure in there. So that's another reason why a lot of these moves they describe have somehow the structure, do something else, and undo the first one. That comes really from, they might have been constructed in a somewhat different way, more ad hoc, but that's why there is the Dreyer generator structure in there. Okay, so, and that is also, if you want to calculate a stabilizer for something or so, that is what is used by the computer in the end. A few remarks about these, which I might in part already have made last time. There are lots of, right? If your group is generated by three elements, which is not very bad, and your subgroup has an index 1,000, that's again not very bad, you get 3,000 Dreyer generators. Well, some of them are automatically the identity by definition, right? If Ri times Gj actually is the representative for the coset, then this quotient becomes trivial. But if that is not the case, then so you get basically for each coset is defined, so what is the number of Dreyer generators of non-trivial is, I have to be slightly careful. If you have a concrete group, it can happen that some other Dreyer generators happen to be trivial. And that's just because, say, if you take the cyclic group of order 3 and you take as index generated by 1, you would have to pick more generators to make the number larger. But basically, So, for example, if you have the cyclic group of order 3 and generated by one element A, and your coset representatives are 1, A, and A squared, right? Then you have, and your subgroup would be the trivial subgroup. You could take A squared as coset representative times the generator A. That gives you the trivial element. That lies, so the trivial coset, the representative, would be the identity element. So you divide the identity element off. So you would get A cubed times identity inverse. But in that group, A cubed happens to be the identity, right? So you get a trivial Schreier generator, even though that was not a definition of a coset element. That happens to hold in the group. So Schreier generators can be the identity because of further properties which hold in a particular group. What I mean here is the ones which are non-trivial by definition. So so I mean that R times G bar is not by definition, is not defined as R bar, yeah, or R bar, I don't need it, but R times G. Right? So if R is a coset representative and I multiply by the element G, and I simply say R times G shall be the coset representative, then this becomes the identity. So another way of looking at it is, these are the ones which are not trivial in the free group. If you would, so non-trivial. And other Schreier generators can happen to be the identity. But that depends on the group. But generically, how many do I have? The number of non-trivial Schreier generators. Well, I have in total, the number is the product of the number of generators of the group times the number of coset representatives. Okay. But how many of them become trivial by this definition? So this is n times m. How many become trivial? Well, those which were made where I get the coset definition, where they define the coset representative. So how many of the cosets get defined in the process? M minus 1, right? Because for the identity I made a fixed choice. So I get minus M minus 1, and that would be N times M minus M plus 1, where N is the number of generators of the group and M is the index. Right, that number gets, so if you have three generators index 1,000, you get 3,000 minus 1,000 plus 1, so you get 2,001 generators. That's a huge number. In most cases, alas, not in all, and we'll see that in a little while, but in most cases, almost all of them are redundant. In most cases, if you work with finite groups, just two or three of these Schreier generators would be sufficient. So you get lots of them. However, if your group is a free group where you start with, then none of them, apart from the ones which become trivial there, are redundant. And that's why you really need that number. Why in the theorem, if you just use groups, you cannot improve that number of Schreier generators. Okay. Yeah. What I want to do now is to look at a way to get a presentation of a sum. So, this is going back to the situation when we did coset enumeration. So,
Now we want to do the following. We have G is finitely presented. I have U as a subgroup of G, and I want to assume that I have a coset table, or I have the permutation action on the cosets of U. This is basically what a coset table gives me. Suppose we know the action of G on the cosets of U, i.e. the coset table, right? The permutation action. The columns of the coset table are simply the images of the permutations for the generators and their inverses.
Okay.
Right, the coset table for U and G. Okay. And we could have gotten that coset table, well, yes, by coset enumeration, or we might have looked at possible homomorphic images of the finitely presented group. You test, if you map the generators to some other finite group, to elements there, does this give you a homomorphism? Do the images fulfill the relators? Then you have a homomorphism, and you just take a subgroup of your image, and that would give you a subgroup, and you can calculate the permutation action in the image. So, what I want to do is I want to write down a presentation for U itself as a finitely presented group. Consider U as a finitely presented group. And the reason I want to do this is, for example, so I can go from a group to a subgroup and I begin in the same state as before, that I have a group with generators and relations. So I could investigate further by taking the group and going further. Or what I can do, for example, from this, if I want to test. This is often used as a method for testing whether a finitely presented group is infinite. It doesn't work in all cases, but it works in many, many cases. If you find a subgroup which has an infinite abelian quotient, well, the whole group must be infinite. How can we find an infinite abelian quotient of a finitely presented group? By writing the relators as columns or as rows in a matrix and doing the Smith-Noble form. So, what is done is, one takes a finitely presented group, one finds a subgroup, for example, and I think I had mentioned this low index algorithm, you look for subgroups of small index, and now you want to see what are their abelian quotients. That process will do this. This will give us a presentation for the subgroup, and we work with it. Okay, so that's what I want to get at, and this presentation will be on the Schreier generators, because that's in some way the only generating set I can give generically. So on the non-trivial Schreier generators. Okay. And what we will get from this actually is then also a consequence for subgroups of free groups. Okay. Right. So what I want to give you now is a theorem which basically says if you do this, you get a presentation.
Okay. In describing this, one would need to be a little bit careful. If you really want to write this down completely, completely waterproof. And the reason is, if we are talking about groups and presentations, we have elements in some way on two levels. We can have an element of a group, and we can have the symbols which we are using to represent these elements. So, if I have, for example, again, the cyclic group of order 3 and a generator A, then A cubed is the identity in that group. But if I represent it by an element X, then X cubed is the word X cubed, and it's not yet the identity. I can demand as a relator, I want that X cubed is the identity, but it formally is a different thing. So, if I want to do this formally correct, I actually have to, in some way, have four different generating sets there. I have the actual generators of G. I have underlying the generators of the free group. And I have relators in the free group. And I have the Schreier generators of U. And I formally have words, have symbols for these Schreier generators in which I form words. Okay, that is something which is not... I don't think making this distinction really helps in understanding how the process works. So the way I will give you the proof is slightly sloppy, in that I will identify these generators. Just if you read through this and you wonder, why does this hold, isn't, why do I demand this, doesn't this automatically hold? Yes, that's this step in between. And if I, in the version how I've written it up in these lecture notes, it uses the two different generating sets to make that distinction. Yeah, so this is really just, I hope when we go through the proof you will find this just will fit together nicely. Just be aware, technically there are two different, there are the group elements and there are the words shadowing the group elements. Okay. Right. This theorem is due to Rademeister. And he says the following. So let G, which is generated by elements G1 up to G, then give a number for how many? Well, let's say Gn, because the n I use there, subject to relators. And now I want to call, I called the coset representatives R. I should have called the coset representatives T, because I want to use R for relators. So, let's call them T. Okay. So I have some relators, R1 up to, let's say, RK. So these shall be the relators. Okay. And I have a subgroup of finite index. Okay. Right. Next, I'm taking coset representatives. Let T1, when T1 I actually want to be the identity element, up to Tm be representatives
of the cosets of U in G, and I pick the Schreier generators S I J, which would be T I G J, T I G J bar inverse are the Schreier generators. Okay. Right. Now, what I want to do is I only want to take those Schreier generators which are not the identity by definition. So let an index set, which is a subset of the Cartesian product of 1 up to n with 1 up to m, shall be the set of those pairs ij such that Sij not trivial by definition of the TI. Okay. So I take these Schreier generators, and now I need one further tool, and that further tool is the following. That is basically a rewriting process. So if you look back at how did we prove Schreier's theorem, the proof actually worked by saying we pick an element in the subgroup, and because it's in the group, we assume we write it as a finite product of generators in G. And then we went through this product one by one and replaced it to be a product in Schreier generators. Right? Do you remember in the proof? We had a product G1, G2 of certain generators of the group, and we went through always taking the next generator, and basically we inserted a coset representative times the coset representative inverse, and then we grouped things differently to that we could group things together to become Schreier generators. And we that way saw, yes, everything is just a product of Schreier generators. So this process I will denote by rho. So let rho be a map from G to the words in the Schreier generators, which is the rewriting process from the proof of Schreier's lemma. Okay. So what it will do is it will take an element of the subgroup written as a word in the generators and will write it as a word in these Schreier generators. Okay. And if you want to do it formally, actually, you wouldn't express it in the Sij. You would make new symbols, Eij, which are the formal symbols, and you would write it in these formal symbols. Okay? So far, everything clear what my objects are. And we'll do later an This, in the end, in practice, isn't that horribly complicated. It's more, this is one of the cases where actually the proof in the end is probably far easier than writing down the theorem properly with all the things. Okay. Right. So what does the theorem state? Then, if I take the generators Sij such that the pair ij lies in my index set. I don't want the other ones because they're trivial by definition. Okay. And now I want to write down relators. What are these, what relators do I take? So, I'm taking any coset representative, Tx, and I multiply by any relator, Ry, and I divide off the coset representative inverse, where 1 smaller equal x, smaller equal than m, and 1 smaller equal y, smaller equal k. Is a presentation. For the subgroup U. Okay. So, and here, and this is deliberate. This is the one case, essentially, in this whole course where something like conjugation is done the other way around. Usually I write G inverse HG. Here I'm writing GHG inverse, and that's really how I need it. It's the other way around, and that is not a mistake. That is deliberate in this one situation. Okay, so that gives us a presentation for the subgroup. Okay, so first, why is, oh, and what I want to do is I want to rewrite these relate these things in my Schreier generators. Okay, so why are these expressions in the Schreier generators which give us the identity? Well, if you go to the group G, in the group G, this is the identity. This relator evaluates to the identity. If I conjugate, it's the identity. And if I write it in the Schreier generators, I'm in this, all in the group G, it is still the identity. So clearly, nothing of this can be non-identity. The statement is basically to say that is all. Every relator, every identity among the Schreier generators will follow from these relators. Okay, that's the first observation. The second observation is, what does this actually do, or how can I interpret this? The T's are coset representatives, so they correspond to the cosets. What this is saying is, if I take any coset, I apply any relator of the group. Right, if I take the coset representative, I multiply it with the relator, and I divide off the coset representative. Then I should be back, because that is the identity, I should be back at one. Not just in the subgroup, but back at one. And that's what it says.
It's just like a change of basis, more or less.
In some way, it's a bit like a change of basis for the relators, yeah. That's how you... And indeed, to apply this concretely, that's basically what we do. What we need to do is essentially just trace through every relator at every coset and collect the Schreier generators we get on the way. And I'll show you in an example, it's something you don't want to do for 1,000 cosets because it's a lot of work, but it's something which can be very easily automated. Right. The last remark before proving this is the following corollary, and that is the theorem of Nielsen and Schreier. Okay, we will only be able to prove it for the case of a finite index subgroup. It holds for infinite index as well. And then a proof, a topological proof is used for proving this. We need finite index because this theorem is subgroups of finite index. Namely, what the theorem says, any subgroup of a free group is free on the Schreier generators. And that formula gives you the rank of what it is,
what it is free. So, why does this hold? Well, take for G a free group, then you have generators and you have no relators. Take a subgroup of finite index, well, then it tells you pick Schreier generators, the ones which are not trivial by definition. What happens here? Yes, you need to rewrite certain expressions for all relators, but there are no relators in the free group. That set is empty. So then the result is empty. So, since that says it is a presentation, that subgroup is again free. The same holds, I mean, for free abelian groups, that's something which one can prove already in, is often proven already in 567, that a subgroup of a free abelian group is free. Here we have a subgroup of a free group is free. A vector, a subspace of a vector space, the vector, okay, that's a bit of tautology, that's not that, that exciting. But that fits in the same category. So any subgroup of a free group is free, which is, and actually because of this formula, the rank goes up. That's a little, it's one of these things which can happen with infinity, that you get to go to a sub-thing, which is a subset, and in a certain way it is larger, because it is free of much larger rank. So in particular, once you have a free group on, the only case where it doesn't get larger is if you have only one generator. If n is one, then basically this cancels out and you always just get one. But that's a free cyclic group. There are any subgroup of a cyclic group is cyclic and you just have one generator. But in particular, this means if you have a free group on two generators, you will find as subgroups free groups of arbitrary high rank. And one can generalize this formula even to infinities. It's just then one needs to be more careful. What does it mean to multiply things together? So, subgroups of a free group are free. And that is the reason why you can't reduce the number of Schreier generators. Because in a free group, you can't generate it with fewer generators. Why that? Take a free group on k generators, take a k-dimensional vector space over a finite, over the field with two elements, and consider it as an abelian group. So instead of addition, you write multiplication. What about the scalar multiplication? The scalar multiplication over a finite prime field isn't really much, this is just based on addition. So once you have the addition, you don't get anything new with the scalar multiplication over a prime field. Over a finite prime field. So, you have a vector space. You map a free group of rank k to a k-dimensional vector space. Well, if you could generate the free group with fewer elements, you could generate the vector space with fewer elements. But in linear algebra, you've proven a vector space, the dimension of a vector space is the minimal cardinality of a generating set. There you can't, since you can't generate the image, you can't generate the free group with fewer elements. Yeah. So therefore, in Schreier's lemma, we cannot reduce the number of generators. We really, in the generic case, if our assumption is just we have a group, that is all we can do. Right. So, yeah. Let's prove this. The proof of this in some way is almost a letdown after all this formal. I mean, it's a clever idea, but there is nothing. The proof is basically straightforward. What else can one do? The proof is shorter, much shorter than writing down the theorem. In particular, if you write the theorem down carefully by explaining that you distinguish between group elements and symbols. Okay, so let's prove this. So we have seen already that these expressions must
become the identity of the group. So clearly all row of Tx, Ry, Tx inverse must be identity. So I'm not giving any relator which should not hold. All of these things must hold. So the only thing I need to show is that any arbitrary relator in the group would be a consequence in this, every arbitrary relator in the subgroup must be a consequence of these. Okay, so what I need to do is I need to take an expression in the Schreier generators which is the identity. So let W in SI, in the SIJ be an expression in the Schreier generators that evaluates to the identity. Okay, so you could say this is an arbitrary relator or whatever expression, doesn't even have to, some expression in the Schreier generators, which is the identity. And I need to show it is a consequence of these. Okay. So why is this the key? So I'm now going back to my group and use the definition of the Schreier generators. Well, so this is an expression that is the identity in the subgroup U. Then if I take the same word and I evaluate it in the TI GJ TI GJ bar inverse is also the identity in the group G. Well, the subgroup lies in the group. I'm just expressing this. Okay. And now here is a place where we formally would need to go to the different symbols to say it's now an expression also in the symbols for G. Okay. But if this is the identity in G, I can write it as, because I have a presentation for G, I can write this as a product of conjugates of relators. So, therefore, this can be written as a product of conjugates relators are I conjugate by some elements hj, and formally here I really would need to have a double index because the relators already had numbers, but to write it nicer, let me be a little bit sloppy. Okay. So, over, no, sorry, not HJ, it's the HI, for some HI in the group G. Okay. Right. So, this expression, if I go to the symbols, I can write it, and that's in some way the definition of a presentation. The relators are normal subgroup generators for the kernel. So, any element that means normal subgroup generators just means I don't just take these elements, but I also allow conjugates. Relators is saying any identity in the group, any expression in these generators which gives me the identity, well, this would be an expression in these generators in the free group, something which lies in the kernel. By lying in the kernel, it means I can write it as a product of conjugates of these elements. Okay? That's just what being a relator means if I go to the free group. And the only thing where I'm slightly sloppy is in this distinction between group elements and the corresponding symbols.
Okay. So, what I need to see is this expression. Now, I can look at S an expression, the product of conjugates in these. Okay. Why is this the case? So, I can write that word in this form. Let's just look at a single factor. So, let's look at a single factor. Ri, some relator conjugate by some element of the group. And what I want to do is, I want to write this element H as an element of the subgroup. Okay. What I want to do is I want to get to coset representatives. Okay. Assume that H, so I have a single factor, let's write the single factor just as R to the H to avoid having to deal with the indices. Right, so that would be H inverse R H. Right? Okay. And what I now want to do is I want to write H inverse as an element of the subgroup times a coset representative. I can do that. That's the definition of coset representatives, right? The element H must lie in some subgroup, in some coset, so I can write the coset U H inverse would be the same as the coset U T. But that means I can write H inverse as U times T with that's how I want to do. What do I need to? That's fine. As U times T with U in the subgroup, and T is one of the coset representatives, T1 up to Tm. Right? That is just saying they are coset representatives. That's all what I'm using there. Okay. Now let's plug that in into this expression. What is R conjugated by H? Then R conjugated by H, which was H inverse RH, is, now let's plug that in for H inverse. So that would be U times T times R. Okay. And for H inverse, I need to invert this so I get T inverse U inverse. Okay. Right. So that is a relator. That's what this expression is. Okay. Now let's look at this. This is exactly one of these expressions here, right? And by the rewriting, this is an expression in the Schreier generators. This is one of the relators in the Schreier generators. Okay, and what is that? That's a conjugate with something in the subgroup. Well, I want relators for the subgroup, and if I have a relator, the conjugates I get for free. So the conjugates don't do anything, they don't do any harm. This is a U conjugate. So what I can do is, this expression I can instead write, if I go to the symbols of the subgroup, this is if I take that expression here, formally in the generators of the group, I can rewrite it as an expression in generators in the subgroup of the subgroup, where I have one of those relators which I used, okay, and a conjugate. The conjugates don't do harm, so I'm done. Okay, and I'm more than out of time. Thank you very much, and I'll see you on Thursday.
Just out of curiosity, you're teaching 666.
Yes.
Do you have any idea what you're aiming
yes,
for?
Yes, what I'm planning to do is representation theory.
Yes. Yeah, cool.
Because I think that I will send in the today or tomorrow or, well, if I forget on...